Innocent until proven guilty, it's the Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast. The Medicare podcast that won't make you feel stupid. Speaking of quitters, he quit smoking in 2015, Medicare expert Doug Jones.
Hey, welcome to Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast, the podcast that keeps lazy people awake far past their bedtimes. We are so happy to have you, and as our announcer, Drew McMillan, told you, this is Doug Jones, your Medicare expert, at least for this week. I'd like to take a week or two off, but that just can't happen if I'm going to keep everybody educated about Medicare. I do it in the most painless way I can think of, which is to cut out all the extemporaneous garbage and stick to only the important high spots in the whole realm of Medicare knowledge. And before you fall asleep, at least you'll have enough understanding to choose the least expensive and the most effective coverages for you, which you can buy from me if you like. You don't have to. But I hate to turn away customers. I've had a lot of people ask me if I could be their agent, and I have had to turn many of them down because Randy and I were not ready. But we're at the point now where we are ready to accommodate people around the country, almost any state. We can handle a person who would rather not have to go out and find an agent to do business with. If they'd rather deal with us, we are ready. So Randy, he looks pretty excited. He said, yep, bring him on. How you doing today?
I'm good. I do have a couple. I would like to get started right away on a couple things that are just burning in my memory banks from our
Is it really a good idea to start with the Medicare information that early in the... actually, that's what we promised to do. That was our New Year's resolution.
Yeah, that was our New Year's resolution, and my mom always told me you got to eat your supper before you can go out and play.
Well, let me preface this by saying our last episode, which you may have listened to, I hope you did, the whole episode I explained what it was like for the insurance guy to extract all of the required information necessary to fill out an insurance application, and it's a whole bunch of questions. And some of them seem silly and meaningless. Others are, kind of important, but, you know, who cares? So Randy took notes during that process, and he's got questions that arose about the application process that people have to go through when they want to buy insurance. So lay it on me, Randy.
Well, there's a couple questions. One is underwriters, the mole people.
Yes.
Affectionately referred to them as
those who never see the light of day.
They never see the light of day, and most of them, if they're the type of individuals that I assume they are, don't want to see the light of day.
No, they'd rather just reject applications.
Right, right. So my question is, in an insurance company, everybody has underwriters, but do underwriters have some sort of a target refusal rate?
If they do, they keep it a secret from me. It's been my pleasure, and I use the air quotes when I say pleasure, to deal with a lot of underwriters during my 45 years in the health insurance business. Once in a while, I'll find an underwriter who takes great joy at actually accepting risk for the company. They try to get creative. They try to help you say, hey, maybe this situation can be looked at a different way. Maybe we don't need the answer to that question. If it's difficult for the person to comply with our request, maybe there's another way to approach this. Those underwriters are few and far between. So the rest of them are the ones, I don't know that they have a quota for turning things down. I think they just dodge risk.
That's interesting. That's interesting because I would assume that in a, for lack of a better term, a high volume production environment, depending on the company, that they would have some sort of a gauge of an underwriter's performance. And otherwise, how do they determine whether an underwriter is doing his or her job.
I bet you they have a way of following up after the fact. Most of my career was spent in dealing with groups. So there'd be a company with, let's say, 50 employees. So if I'm sending the underwriter a stack of applications from a company that has 50 employees, that's obviously a bigger project than an application from one Medicare supplement applicant. So I have watched underwriters at work go from, oh God, another stack of paper on my desk. Oh, this one was sent in by Doug Jones. All right, well, he's a pretty nice guy. Let me call him up, ask him a few questions, and see if I can get this thing going. And I've watched their mental attitude in a given period of time, like 15, 20 minutes to a half an hour, go from, this is a pile of garbage that I wish I could just shovel into the wastebasket, to, oh, now I have a clearer understanding of what this company is and what they're after and what they want to do. So let me approach this with a fresh new attitude. I've seen their attitudes change from looking at that pile of paper and hating it and wanting it to go away to actually saying, ooh, I might be able to actually do a good job with this. And then a year later, let's suppose that company has had some sickos, some people that cost like brain tumors and expensive, you know, $1 million worth of burn treatments and things like that. Well, there's somebody in the insurance company that's going to pull the file out that the underwriter worked on, and they're going to analyze it, probably, if enough money was involved. They're going to analyze it to see if the underwriter functioned properly. Were they in cahoots with me where I was able to sneak some medical problems through that maybe it would be unfair to saddle the insurance company with? Or is there evidence that somebody lied about the medical history of the people that they had to write big checks for? Or is everything on the up and up? I think that's how the underwriters are measured. It would be down the road. Somebody would look back at the results of their work.
Now, another question that occurred to me, Doug, is you've mentioned several times that an underwriter's job is to balance getting a customer versus the risk that they represent. Company.
No, what I said was an underwriter's job is to refuse all risk and to frustrate the heck out of me and all other salespeople.
That part.
What you did was you took that very negative statement and turned it into a very diplomatic assessment of what the reality is.
So my question is what defines a risk to an insurance company that is intolerable, they cannot take?
Well, they want to know whether the risk that you're bringing them, and that could be an individual or it could be a stack of applications from 50 employees in a company, or it could be a house that's sitting in the middle of a highly flammable gasoline storage facility.
Yeah, you know, right in the middle of an oil field.
and so what they want is to have the risk, the nature of the thing that they're looking at, to be normal and average. So they're going to be happier with a house that's in the middle of a neighborhood than a house that's sitting next to an oil storage, or, you know, has an oil storage facility on one side and a Zippo lighter factory on the other side. So that's going to be a risk that they'll want to turn down. They'll be looking for a reason to turn that down. If a typical 65-year-old sends an application in for a Medicare supplement plan, if we still had medical underwriting in this country, they'd be looking for somebody that's a normal 65-year-old. Remember how I said to our listening audience, if you've got an expensive Medicare supplement plan and you'd like to get one of our high-performance GTO Medicare supplements because you're generally a healthy person and you want to save a bunch of money, like $150 a month sometimes, then we will deal with the medical questions. The underwriter will look at the answers to those questions and say either this person is normal for a 65-year-old or a 70 or a 75-year-old, or this person is not normal. And if they're not normal, does that mean they've had a really active medical history that is, you know, that predicts more medical problems coming down the pike? So they want to take with open arms somebody who's 75 years old but has a normal 75-year-old's medical history. So I again, offer our services to all people that have Medicare supplements that would like to change to the high-powered GTO of Medicare supplements by asking us to apply for coverage and answer the medical questions, because then the underwriters will have an opportunity to assess whether they're normal for their age or not.
Does an insurance, now I don't know if this is the right term, Doug, and I think it applies to life insurance, but is there such a thing or a similar position as an actuary when it comes to the folks, the underwriters for Medicare?
Yes, but what they do is they're limited. The actuaries don't have as much work to do, so now there are actuarial firms, and an insurance company can go to an actuarial firm and say, we want to rent the services of your actuaries on staff. Whereas big life insurance companies all had actuaries that worked for them full time. But what you want to do is predict the future. An actuary in an insurance company is empowered to predict the future, and the insurance company is empowered to act on that prediction. Now, in other words, let's suppose that you got a bunch of money and you are 60 years old and you want to give the money to the insurance company in exchange for a lifetime income that you can never outlive. You might live to be 120, and that income will keep, the insurance company will keep writing checks to you. Well, they will take this whole deal to an actuary and say, what do we think he's going to, you know, what's his life expectancy? And they will say, well, his life expectancy is thus and thus. We can buy bonds to fund this deal at a certain interest rate. So with the money he's given us, we can write him a check every month for X number of dollars, and he'll never outlive it. And generally speaking, we'll win because he'll die before we've used up all that money. So once in a while they win, once in a while they lose.
So essentially, I love math and I love all those kind of things because I'm a software engineer. But back in the day, I loved statistics. That was statistics.
Call you a geek? Would it be okay if we call you a geek?
Yes, statistics and probability was one of my favorite classes. So essentially, what they're doing is constructing a bell-shaped curve. The average dude or dudette, we're happy to serve them, but when they're outside of that norm, then we need to look a little more carefully.
Absolutely correct. And we're going to turn them down if they're too far outside the norm. But what's happening here is that if a certain number of people die too soon and a certain number of people live too long, then it balances out.
Right.
That's where the bell curve comes from. So that fat bunch of people in the middle are going to be pretty close to average most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, that really answers a lot of questions, because I had these things rattling around in my head from the last podcast, and I just had to get the answers to it.
Well, what we did on the last podcast, ladies and gentlemen, was I explained the painful process of extracting information from an applicant in order to feed the machine that is the insurance company underwriter. And Randy was taking notes furiously saying, my God, this is springing, you know, bringing all kinds of questions to my mind, and the fertile mind of Randy Carson. And I was afraid he was going to ask me things that were too hard to answer, but I managed to at least fool him into thinking that I knew what I was talking about. So that's pretty good.
Well, no, you got 45 years in the business. You probably have this all memorized.
Well, every time I learn something new, an old thought, an old piece of knowledge falls out the other side. So it's kind of, it's risky, but it's such a complicated process that it's a wonder that I understand any of it at all. And frankly, if you know the lingo, that's half the battle.
Yeah, well, same holds true for the software business. So I heard you told me early on that we're going to meet the need or desires of some people of ours and subscribers that are constantly asking me for what? What do they always ask me for, Doug?
Mailbag. And frankly, when the bars open up again, maybe they're already open now, but it's kind of restricted. I don't want you to be endangered by their desire for mailbag items. So,
well, I've been rather protected because the bars weren't open, but you know, once they open up and there's business to be had, I can't.
So you were describing them as zombies wandering around in your cul-de-sac looking for you.
Yes, they actually got to that point. I have recently, in the last, since Christmas, actually, so it's been a while. I'm a geek, so I bought a bunch of cameras to install on my house just to see I could do it. And I saw these guys, they were just walking around like zombies with briefcases. And
were they holding a 6-foot chain between them? Or?
Yeah, they were originally. now they just have masks on. But the fact is that I looked at the back of one guy's coat, and he was actually the top Medicare disadvantaged salesman in Arizona.
I would get my Jeep out if I were you and my oven mitts and run that guy over, because that's one less problem that normal people won't be burdened with. If they don't have somebody lying to them about how wonderful Medicare Advantage plans are, then we will have done our work. We will have done God's work. And by the way, you gave me a little tutorial earlier, and I noticed that in the lower left corner of my screen, the color is changing from white to yellow to red.
Yes.
And commensurate with that, you freeze up occasionally. I can hear your voice, but your head just, stops moving.
Well, that happens occasionally anyway, but
what the
yellow, red, and white means we're good. Yellow means we're marginal, and red means we are just hanging on by our skin of our teeth.
Well, until you told me that, I didn't really pay that much attention to it. And I looked down a second ago, and it was redder than hell. And now it's back to white. So maybe we ought to get through a couple of mailbag items.
Yeah.
I've got a kind of a longish one here. This woman was very talkative. We became buddies. In fact, I wound up talking to her on the telephone from a cocktail party that we were having in complete violation of any lockdown and mask wearing and no going out rules that our neighbors basically ignore all of that stuff. And we still do, and nobody's gotten sick. In fact, I don't know anybody that's had this disease. Okay, so here we go. Number one, I have to number the paragraph so I know where it started. But this is a woman named Maureen, and she's got kind of a funny email address, and I'm going to not read it because I don't want all of her family to identify her. But basically, she starts out by saying, "Hi, Doug. I enjoyed reading your book. Thanks for writing it." Now, is that a magnificent way to start a letter? That is fantastic. "I have a couple of questions, and I'd like to pay for a short consultation with you. Is that possible?" And my knee-jerk reaction is, of course that's possible, but then I realize, no, the insurance company pays me when you buy a product, so it's always free to consult with me. So this woman goes on to say, "I turned 65 13 months ago," so she's 66 now. "I'm healthy and I work full-time with good Blue Cross plan. COVID-19, which I call the Chinese flu, that appeared, and we may have to temporarily close our travel business. I don't want Medicare because I'd have to pay a substantially high income penalty, which we call IRMA, due to my higher salary in the past. I still have Blue Cross Insurance Company, and I'll get COBRA insurance for 18 business closes. But due to the Chinese flu, our business is going to have less than 20 employees starting in a couple of days. I realize that I need to sign up for Medicare quickly. I don't want to make an irrevocable mistake. Can you please advise me on, number one, how do I file before our company has less than 20 employees while staying on my Blue Cross employee insurance and eventually COBRA? Number two, what Medicare insurance I need to buy, if any, assuming I keep my current Blue Cross insurance? High deductible plan F," she asked about, "and the cheapest drug plan? Do I do it now? Do I do it later? Number three, how do I not make an irrevocable mistake?" She says, "Please let me know if you accept paid consultations and if I can speak with you ASAP. So I answered her pronto, because I love talking to people about this stuff. And I said, "Ms., I'm very happy that you wrote and no payment will be necessary at all. I may request that you return to the site where you got the book to leave a short customer review in order to help me as well as future potential readers, but that'll be entirely your decision. As long as you are actively employed, which you are, with coverage the government assumes is creditable coverage, which I assume yours is for both medical and drugs, you do not need to take any action with respect to Medicare. On the other hand, if you go on COBRA, your coverage will no longer be considered credible. At that point, the clock will be ticking towards a lifetime late enrollment penalty for both Medicare Part B and your drug plan. I don't know what your Part B and PDP IRMA penalties will add up to, but they do not last forever as they are calculated on your modified adjusted gross income from 2 years prior. Additionally, I've heard that some have had good luck when requesting a reduction or elimination of the penalties by explaining the temporary or unusual nature of the high income. If a case can be made that your income from 2 years in the past was the result of an anomaly, it's possible that a sympathetic government functionary will eliminate the penalty. I believe the IRS has ultimate responsibility for assessing or forgiving the penalties. I've changed my opinion a little bit since then, but we'll probably address that in a future letter. To go on with this one, you have given me two conflicting scenarios to work with. The worst of these is the possibility of temporary closing down the business, which would force you to go on COBRA unless you step into Medicare and bite the bullet during the time your high income penalties are in force. If you want to avoid COBRA, as I suggest, the course of action appears to be the same under either scenario. If it looks like the business will cease operations, I would enroll in Medicare with the following anticipated costs. Part A, free of charge, assuming you have the required 40 quarters of taxable employment income. Part B, $144.60 plus whatever the IRMA penalty is going to be this year. Unknown cost next year, but probably close to the same. For a Medicare supplement, if you are a non-smoker age 66 in Illinois, your initial monthly premium with Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois would be $46.69. Smoker rate is $5 more. Prescription drug plan, the least expensive I know of in Illinois, costs just over $13 a month. All of this can be accomplished by June 1st if the Social Security Administration can assure that your Medicare Parts A and B can begin that quickly. Without having a start date for those two parts of Medicare, you cannot get a supplement, and there is a similar restriction for the drug plans. I know this isn't your first choice, but it is a reasonable course of action given the uncertain future of your business. In case this makes sense to you and you want it to get things moving with the feds, I have attached the form they will need in order to verify the fact that you have been actively employed with creditable coverage for the last 13 months. I will be happy to help get your insurance application submitted for a June 1st start date once you are assured of Medicare beginning on schedule. Feel free to come back with any additional questions you might have. So then she said, "Hello, Doug. Thank you very much for your detailed reply. It's very generous of you to spend your time and not to request payment, but you do deserve payment." What a nice lady she is. "I'll be glad to leave a great review, as I do like your book a lot. Thank you also for sending the form. The business might stay open with just 14 employees and keep our company paid health insurance until COVID-19 formally end, or hopefully end. So best regards, Maureen." And then I said, "I hope your business escapes permanent damage from all of this panic. Preliminary reports I hear are very encouraging that it has all been overblown." This was last May. "Call me Pollyanna. Thanks for the kind words and the review. Please be sure to contact me again if I can help further." So that was my exchange with Maureen, and haven't heard back from her since, so I'm hoping that her business was able to stay open. But she wasn't that optimistic about it.
Well, guess what, Doug?
Don't tell me I've been yakking all the way through this whole episode and we're out of time now?
We are out of steam.
Jeez. You know, you get these people begging for the Medicare or for the mailbag, which is great because all they have to do is write their questions to dbj@mlmmailbag.com, and then we will read them on the air. But then when the episode starts, you and I end up jawjacking through half the episode. And so you get any mailbag items taken care of. So I can see why they're frustrated.
Yes. And the other reason, you know, given the fact that I'm the recording engineer, the other reason I'm pulling the plug maybe a little bit early is the internet.
Is it dinner time?
Well, no. I wish it was. But the internet speed is just dealing me fits here. And you're getting occasional breakups, like you're like on an old CB radio, you know. What do you think, Smokey? Is there a Smokey around the corner?
You know, too many episodes have poor audio quality, and I know it's not your fault, and I'm pretty sure it is my fault, because the two places I live most of the year don't have anything better than DSL. And I don't know how my life happened to wind up so far away from a cable outlet that has top-notch internet linkage, but it just doesn't. DSL or worse. Arizona could be worse in some cases. So
you know what,
I apologize.
I used to be a software engineer in a bank and back in Omaha, Nebraska, and one of the things that we were responsible for doing is transmitting data. We processed data for a lot of our banks. We owned quite a few back there.
Does this involve birds sitting on telephone
yes,
wires?
Exactly. You remember?
I think that's a great story, but I bet we have new listeners that haven't heard that
story. Yes. We used to get the people calling in from our remote banks in Nebraska, Kansas, South, and North Dakota. Well, yeah, North Dakota, there was one. And they'd say, well, why are the things so slow? And we didn't have an answer. But we were also, you know, a bunch of young, snot-nosed 20-year-old programmers.
The kind of people you like to slap around.
Yeah, that we just didn't have a whole lot of respect for the truth. And we used to tell them, well, we don't know for sure, but we heard from the Nebraska Wildlife Society that there was a huge influx of starlings about Kearney. On, you know, I-80 going west from Kearney, and that have all roosted on the telephone wires, and it's slowing down transmission.
And how many people actually bought this?
Well, unfortunately, as you might imagine, there was not all of them. They some of them knew it was a joke, but there was others that I heard them turn around in their chair and go, hey, Phyllis, there's a bunch of birds on the wire about out by Kearney.
Well, now it's nice that you're able to tell those things in such a convincing manner that you can fool a few people. But frankly, I don't care what the problem is. I want it fixed. So that's what I'd be doing. I'd be saying, I don't give a crap how many birds are on the wires. You get them off those damn wires right now so things return to normal.
Absolutely, absolutely. So anyway, I would let this go on a little longer, but I don't want to so degraded.
Let's wrap it up then. Go to barnesandnoble.com or amazon.com and buy the book, Medicare for the Lazy Man 2020. It comes in Audible, ebook, or paperback. Your choice. We will gladly have them send you your choice quickly. And also, what do we have? We've got the website, MedicareForTheLazyMan.com.
Yep.
And we have this podcast. If you find a place you can give it a good review, we would appreciate that. And I think that's about it, right?
Well, thanks, everybody. You know, we certainly appreciate your patience with a less than stellar sound quality on this particular episode. But we appreciate you sticking through with us. And we will talk to you again tomorrow or the day after on Medicare for the Lazy Man podcast by Doug Jones, the anti-insurance guy, sole proprietor of Medicare for the Lazy Man.com.
Bye-bye.